Welcome to the Pro Photographer Journey Podcast, your resource for building the photography business of your dreams. This is Shamira Young, bringing you tips, business strategies, and interviews with award-winning photographers. We're all in this together. Let's get to the good stuff. Hey everybody, I'm here with Nick Church from Nick Church Photography. Nick is a wedding photographer who didn't pick up a camera until 2014 and fast forward to today is running a full-time, thriving wedding photography business. What in the world? Nick, welcome to the show.
Hi, Shamira. How are you?
I'm good. And, you know, just to give our listeners a little bit of background, Nick emailed me and briefly told me his story. And it was quite the unusual story with how quickly he grew his business. And I just couldn't, how do you say no to someone who's willing to come on the show and talk about, you know, how they've grown their business so quickly? And so I'm really super excited for this podcast episode. And Nick, by the way, I've looked at your work. It is beautiful.
Well, thank you. That's very kind.
And so I know a bit about you, but I always assume, no matter who I have on the show, that there's someone in the audience who may not have heard of you. And so let's kick it off with you just give us your story, an overview of yourself and how you ended up doing what you're doing today.
Sure. I have always had a career in engineering, so photography just wasn't on the radar at all. So I at university studied civil engineering and then later software design and software engineering. And so that's been my career in the broadcast industry as a developer and architect and project management. But I have always had a creative outlet, and that's either been music or art or something like that. And just around 2014, as you said, that turned into photography. I was traveling quite a lot with work. So I was in a really fortunate job. So I was traveling to the Far East. And I thought I'd better get myself a camera so I can start, you know, snapping some of these amazing scenes that I'm seeing. So I bought a Micro Four Thirds camera. Mm. First time I'd ever used it. So I had to work out how to get it off auto mode and everything else. And I thought, hey, this is kind of cool. I quite like this. And very quickly, I was fortunate enough to be able to get a portfolio of just landscape shots of when I was traveling. And probably more popular was the ones of my hometown, Bristol, in the UK. And I started exhibiting those photos. And so that was only about 6 months after getting the camera. But I think, although I hadn't used a camera before, I've got a background in physics. So I know how optics work, how light works, how technology works, and composition from all the art that I'd done. And I think that was really fortunate for me. And that meant I could, you know, fast track a lot of this stuff. And I was exhibiting photos of Bristol, and a couple that were walking around asked if I would shoot their wedding. And I never shy away from an opportunity, so I said absolutely. And afterwards thought, how the hell am I going to be able to work out how to become a wedding photographer? So that was what occupied my time. So I kept on exhibiting, and within, I have 9 months, I think, until the wedding. And so that gave me plenty of time to work out what to do. The big problem was finding the time between doing that, which hopefully we'll talk more about shortly. But my career was going very well as well. So usually that would be a great news, right? But it was a bit of a bad timing because I was getting promotions, which was great on one hand, but it didn't leave me much time. So I had to be very careful with every spare bit of time I had and making sure that worked for me as well as possible. So I contacted a friend of mine. I didn't have any portfolio, obviously. So I contacted a friend of mine she still had her wedding dress and it still fitted. And she very kindly agreed to put it on. And we went to a local church and I took some shots. And that was my portfolio. And so I met a few couples just with those photos and just tried to sell myself as much as possible, because I think that's so important. And I do keep thinking I should really buy those guys a gift. Those first few clients that I had that booked me based upon what was clearly fairly poor setup shots, stage shots. But they believed what I was saying, that theirs would be great. And they were hopefully they found that they were. That's how I've got to where I am, this journey. And having the full-time job running alongside, I knew that quite quickly that I really wanted to give this a go as a full-time career. Photography. So I basically just used all my corporate knowledge of project management and strategic planning to plan my photography business. And that allowed me to move from the full-time job into going full-time photography just within a couple of years. So sort of two summers of weddings, and then I was able to take the leap.
Wow. So you're doing wedding photography full time now. You're not working your corporate job at all.
That's right, yeah. So I had a very geeky approach to this, which was a spreadsheet, which was working out what my projected 12 months looked like in terms of earnings. And as soon as that projection peaked up at it, what my day job was earning, I thought, well, it's now or never. So late last year was when I resigned and went for it, with the knowledge that I knew r pretty well what the next 12 months held in store. You have to be sensible with these things. I am not particularly risk averse, but I obviously don't want to put anything in jeopardy with regards to the family and so on. So I had to be fairly sure that I was going to get the income that I needed.
Wow. So, Nick, I'm just going to be straight up with you. I'm really jealous right now because the skills that seem to come so naturally to you or that you've learned through your career, project management, strategy, time management, those are things that so many creatives, myself included, that we historically struggle with. And of course, I can't speak for everybody, but I know plenty of photographers, and myself included, where we decided to step into the business because, as I like to say on the show, I thought it'd be unicorns and rainbows, and I'd be shooting all the time, and it'd be this magical thing. And I had to learn the hard way, and maybe that's just the way I am. But with you, the way that you had your spreadsheet, it's just you're interesting. I think you're probably one of the. I've said this before, but my favorite type of person to talk on the show, to have on the show, is someone who didn't necessarily have a background in photography. And with you, civil engineering and software, etc., and then you have this creative side. I mean, you're a pretty lethal threat, so to
Well,
speak.
that's good to hear. But yeah, I think it does show that with the right sort of planning, you can go from zero to something that can be a career, a new career. And that there are, I think, as you infer there, that there are downsides to that. And I think a lot of people that are thinking about doing a transition, as I did, for example, you do need to think about is do I actually want to do this as a job? Because it isn't like you're going to carry on taking photos of sunsets and someone's going to pay you loads of money. It's marketing and posting and writing blogs and inquiries and spreadsheets and accounts and all those other things. And taking photos is quite far down the list in terms of the things that it takes up your time. And if that's all it's about for you, then that there's other options of doing the two, doing a quote normal job and photography alongside each other, or keeping it as a hobby. I mean, certainly every time there's a gorgeous sunset, which we get about three of every year in the UK, when it's not cloudy. Whereas, previous years, a couple of years ago, I'd have grabbed my camera and I'd be out. Now I think, oh, do you know what? I can't be bothered. I've just been editing all day. I don't want any more pictures behind 15,000 wedding photos that I'm never going to get to. And there are downsides like that, but from my point of view, for the first time in years and years and years, I wake up really looking forward to getting to work and getting stuck in and going on a shoot, going to a wedding, whatever it might be, and that feels great.
So I'm also curious, why wedding photography? Once upon a time, I used to be a wedding photographer, and it was giving me gray hairs. I mean, the first wedding, professional wedding that I shot, I woke up with the flu. The whole time, it was like herding cats. I had an assistant to help me, but it was, every single wedding that I did, and I talking to other wedding photographers, it's the norm that things don't go exactly as planned, and it's always something unexpected. And I mean, it's a rewarding, but heavy niche to choose. So, for you, why did you choose wedding photography? Or did it just fall in your lap like it's
Well,
ever
I
worked
think,
out?
as I said, I think I was someone just asked me if I would do it, so there was that the obvious draw that way. But I think weddings are stressful. They are, the bleeding edge of any stress that you can't set things up again. You get one chance to do it. But I think that there's that meme going around that I've seen on Facebook. I've reposted it myself, that says that a lot of people can take photos when everything's going right, but the professional, it is the one that can take good photos when everything's going wrong. And at weddings, you're right, they do tend to go wrong, and it's how you deal with that. But I have found that a lot of people say, wow, that's a stressful sounding job. And I think it is quite stressful, but it's nowhere near as stressful as trying to manage 40 software engineers, which are worse than herding cats, when there's a TV from Samsung about to be launched and then it has to be ready. That's real stress. So,
Oh my goodness.
I've got two cameras at a
Touché, good
time.
point.
So if the worst case is that a camera goes wrong and I'll just work on the other one. And I think if you have got plans in place for contingency if things do go wrong, then you can take a lot of that stress away. But as you say, every wedding, something crazy happens that you couldn't possibly predict it. But some of those things are where the great shots are as well, and that's why I like to leave a wedding day plan a little bit flexible, without too much kind of 3:15, we're going to do solo shots, 3:20, because I think if you've got more of an open schedule to it, when there's an auntie doing Jägerbomb somewhere in a bar, that's when you want to forget what you were doing and go and take shots of that.
I highly encourage your listeners to check out Nick's website. It's at nickchurchphotography.co.uk, and I'll absolutely include that link in the show notes because your work is stunning. It
Oh,
looks
thank
like you've been doing this for decades as opposed to, just a handful of years.
I do feel like I have, if that helps.
Oh, and so, I'm curious. So, in telling your story, you touched on this, but I'd like to dig into it a little bit more because it's something that a lot of our listeners really struggle with, and that's gaining momentum with your business. In the beginning, you mentioned that you kind of staged a wedding shoot and used that as your portfolio, and then some people just happened to ask you to start shooting weddings. Or how did you really gain momentum for your business and so quickly?
It's a good question. The what I've always been, because I probably sound like I'm really organized so far, but
You
I'm
do.
really disorganized, and that's why I have such processes in place. Because I, if you could see my desk now, for example, then it would probably give someone a breakdown. But so I know that if I'm just gonna have a vague idea that I'm going to become a photographer, I know that it won't happen. I'll be going down rabbit holes of, oh, I need to, buying every lens under the sun, not being sure. Then so I do have a very strategic way of focusing my mind on things, and I tend to use a system called Kanban, which is a Japanese system of, effectively, it's a to-do list. That's Kanban, Kanban. It's just a, in its simplest form, it's a fairly old technique. In its simplest form, it's post-it notes just stuck on with blue tack stuck onto a wall, which just has, you've got columns for things that you want to do, the things that you're doing, and things that you've done. So it's a to-do list, but with a backlog of tasks that you think you can do. But you only focus on one of those at a time, and you order that list, the to-do list, you order that so that the most valuable thing you can put your time into is at the top.
Oh,
And then
that's
you.
interesting.
You only ever look at the top thing, and you take the top card off. You put it into the progress in progress column. So you are now working on that task, and you don't do anything else until you finish that task. And it stops you going down, oh, I'll just do this blog. Oh, I can't do the blog because the website needs this to be updated. Oh, I'll just do that. And you end up with so many things that just are almost done, but not quite, that it's a real killer for productivity. But that system allows me to focus on one thing, get it done. Especially if we've got other jobs where you only have 10 minutes or so, you have to just dip into that task, dip into it again a bit later on, again a bit later on, and get it finished, and then look at the next thing that's the most important thing. And that way, as well as really keeping yourself focused on doing just one thing, it's you've already decided it's the most important thing you can do, and you should always be looking at how important these other things are, other things in the list. So if you have an idea, for example, oh, that'd be a great idea, get it on a card, put it into the list. Work out roughly how important it is, and then don't think about it again, because every time you're thinking about that, you're kind of wasting your time if it's not the most important thing. And there's a system called Trello, software versions of this model. Trello, Clubhouse.io I use, which is free, and it's just a very good way to organize yourself a bit. So I use that system, everything I could think of when in those early days, to be shooting and just getting as much experience shooting as I could. I would just have an idea. For example, on the way to work, I went past a heritage project where they were renovating a 17th century gatehouse near where I live. I thought, I wonder if they're looking for to have that photograph. So I just volunteered to have that documented. So I volunteered to be a photographer for that. They were, as it turned out, were looking for someone to take photos, but they couldn't find anyone to do it because they didn't have any budget. And I said, well, that's fine because I'm coming past here every day, so I'll do it free. And those sorts of things are in the paper, that they're social, you know, it's being broadcast on social media. It's a local thing that a lot of people know about. And if you're the one that's creating the content for it, and you've got your image credit on every image that goes out, then that's a useful thing. And that was, you know, so all that marketing is completely free. And all right, it took some of my time, but it did give me some experience in shooting in a commercial setting. And likewise, every other small business, every maker of jewelry or cakes or anything, all these people want good photos for their website. There should never be a shortage. There's never a shortage of people that want photos. So if as long as you're happy so one Christmas, everyone got jewelry, for example, for their Christmas present, because I did a load of photos. The artist wasn't able to pay for those, but she was able to give some jewelry, so that
Oh,
was
very
great. So
nice.
I had that as payment instead. And I think once you start getting rewarded for that, then that's a really important milestone, even if it's rewarded in kind or with a service or you know a product rather than money. I think that's really important because your own value in your work goes up considerably when you know someone's willing to pay for it. So yeah, so using all of these just small bits of time and making best use of them meant that I did have my finger in a lot of pies, my thumb in a lot of pies initially. So again, every band that were playing locally, they're always going to want photos. So I did lots of that. The wedding is a practical thing that the wedding stuff that I knew that so much money spent on weddings. I think I read some statistic that I think 75% of the world's money spent on photography goes into weddings. So I knew if this was going to be an actual career, you know, something that I could move into full time, I knew it had to be weddings. It was just as simple as that.
Interesting. Okay, and so, and since we're talking about how you kind of narrowed down your focus, you know, I'm not quite sure, me being in the States, you know, what the market is in the UK. So, how did you decide what kind of weddings you'd go for? How did you identify your target market?
Well, I think it is a very buoyant market in the UK. From my understanding, it is a lot lower value. I don't think people spend the same on weddings than they do in the US, from what I can tell. So, for example, my prices the a full day package is £2,000, which is what, about $2,500. That is pretty high for someone to spend on wedding photography. I know in the US it seems that people spend a lot more than that, but as I said, I'm not sure on that.
Yeah, they do.
So
At least from, yeah.
that's why I ended up last year doing 45 weddings a year.
Ooh.
So and I think a lot of people that do this as a career, you do an awful lot of weddings because you have to. But yeah, finding that target market, I again strategically, I couldn't afford to do loads of weddings free because I didn't have time to do it. I've got four kids as well, so my time was really precious.
Oh, yes.
So I had to start marketing my service, even without portfolio, at a rate that I knew that could then, you know, be something to bring in some decent income. And that meant that so I wasn't inundated with offer with people that were coming to me, but there was enough that you know I just set the price right and targeted it using Facebook. So I did a lot of Facebook advertising and still do, and have always been able to find the right target market. And that's as time has gone on, I've just increased the, you know, sort of just changed that slightly to be looking for those people that are potentially spending more and more on weddings. And that's how I've got so much weddings booked in. As time's gone on now, then the referrals and those other routes, wedding fairs and things, are other ways that you're getting income. And I think that's quite important, not to have just one route that clients come to you, because that's quite risky. So I've worked quite hard in the last 12 months to sort of expand out into other ways, not just relying on Facebook. But Facebook still provides me probably half my bookings.
That's so interesting. Okay. Yeah, and I know with Facebook, because I have used ads more for this podcast than for my own photography business, but it is very cool and also kind of scary how specific you can get with Facebook ad targeting. So I can see how that could be a very, very useful tool. And, you know, I'm curious, and this isn't I didn't send this in the questions beforehand for you, so not trying to catch you off guard, but I know with wedding photography, the onboarding process is very, very important, at least I have found, for new clients. And I've encountered photographers who, I can't speak for the UK, but here in the US, so my opinion, because I'm full of opinions all day, whether you ask or not, but you know, I think wedding photography is one of the most challenging types of photography. And yet at the same time, it seems to be the one that people will do for free, where a family member will see that you just bought a camera and they're like, oh, why don't you just show up to this wedding, to my wedding, you know, and with your camera, happen to take some photos. And I'll occasionally get messages from newbie photographers or people who are just doing it for fun as a hobby. And they say, well, you know, my cousin asked me to show up with my camera and I'm shooting their wedding. And my plan is just to show up and take photos. And what do I do? You know, so like, it's the thing they'll do for free and they underestimate what they're getting into. And so just for those who, you know, are considering wedding photography as a career, I want to talk briefly about, if you're open to it, the onboarding process. Cause I think preparation before the wedding is like 95% of the challenge. How do you onboard your clients? How do you get them ready?
I do a consultation meeting with them. Mm-hmm. So that's quite important. That's after they book. I try and limit the amount of time I spend with them before they booked, because mm-hmm. that's just wasting money. I also found out recently that one of my automated emails that goes out when people have booked, that says, I'll be in touch soon to arrange a consultation meeting. I realized I had a typo in it, and it was saying to people, congratulations on your wedding. I'll be in touch to book a consultation meeting. Awful, couldn't have been worse. People didn't seem to notice. But yeah, so we do that, and that's really important, because the thing that I'd like to offer that's different, I suppose, or the thing that makes me, that I try and have a USP, is just really relaxed, that they're not going to be doing posing all day. They're going to be just interacting with each other, and that only works if they're quite comfortable around me. So it's that consultation meeting, unless it's a wedding. I did a couple this year that were in other countries in Europe, so that, which was great, but you do have the problem there that you can't get to meet people. So that's really important, just to get comfortable, share a few jokes, share a beer, share a coffee, whatever it might be. And that's always a really good start. The other thing that I do is I want to know, whilst I don't want to plan my time to every 5 minutes, because I know that will just really stop my creativity on the day. Mm-hmm. I do want to know exactly what times things are happening, so that I can be flexible and work around things and make sure that I've not disappeared with the couple just as they're about to go in for their wedding meal, for example. Mm-hmm. So I do want to know what those timings are. The other thing that I'd like to know from them is just what group shots they want, because I think of all the complaints of, let's say, how many have I done? Maybe 150 weddings, maybe 100. The only time there's ever been any feedback, which isn't just, oh my God, we love them, it's been, oh, we really hope you were going to get that shot. And the response always has to be, well, you didn't ask for it. You know, I am sorry that we didn't get it. Mm-hmm. You didn't ask for it. And that's a real shame. So that's the thing where I think you probably get 80% of any potential complaints removed from the outset, is just to have a list of the shots that they want. Because even if they've got some idea that there's a shot where they want to have them holding the rings, for example, it's going to be a bit of a cliche shot anyway, but if they want it and it's not there, then you're asking for trouble. So just make sure I get those in as well.
And you know, I'm so glad you brought that up, because that was something I was going to bring up, at least having some form of a shot list. And you know, I'll try not to get ranty, but you know, I've seen this time and time again, where I was at a friend's wedding recently, and it was the day before the wedding, so we were all getting together for the rehearsal, and I asked her, well, did you talk to your photographer? They had hired someone to do it for free. Right. So, and I said, well, did you discuss with them a shot list, a list of, you know, specific shots? And she kind of looked at me like, no, not at all. I'm like, well, you know, certain combinations, grandparents, grandkids, all that stuff. And she's like, I didn't think about that at all. And so they had to hurry up and put one together. And the photographer showed up and all of a
Oh,
sudden had
gosh.
this shot list. And it's like, and that's the number one tip that I give to people whenever I have friends reaching out to me saying, "Hey, I'm shooting my first wedding. What do I do?" I always mention have a shot list, because even if the bride and groom don't realize it, they want certain combinations, or their parents are going to want certain people combinations. They need to think about that. And when I was doing weddings, that was something we put together months in advance, which just sitting down over coffee, just I always had like a standard checklist, and we go through, and those are so important. So I'm so glad you brought that up.
You're absolutely right. And those the couples that I have a few couples that will say we don't want any formal shots at all, and almost all of your brain is going, thank goodness for that. That's amazing news. But every time they're disappointed, or the parents disappointed, they didn't get a shot of them and their kid. Rightly so, because sometimes the parents have paid for most of the wedding, so
True.
they kind of wanted a shot with their son or daughter, and it's difficult. The other thing that is useful when chatting to people in that in the time before the wedding, and that extends after the consultation meeting, I like to keep available via Messenger or text or whatever, or so that people can just throw some comments and we could just have a little bit, keep in touch so you feel like you're building that relationship, even though it may not be hugely valuable interactions. But if it's a shared post with a smiley face and you put your thumbs up, that's a bit of interaction where you have then become a little bit closer. And as time goes on, that's really useful, because on the day I want to know what my two clients are like together, because that's what I'm going to be doing most of my photos on. And people look at my website, we'll see that it's all about the interactions between people, those natural interactions. And I don't want to be forcing a couple. We've all seen those couples that aren't particularly tactile, that they're going to be really awkward if they're being asked to go and, to be that lovey-dovey romantic kind of shot that doesn't suit them. And that, apart from it being horrible and awkward, it also means that the photos that I deliver won't represent them and the spirit of them and their wedding. And I think that's something I like to do to make it unique, so everyone's set of photos, even at the same venue, look very different because everyone's different, and that's how it should be. So that's what I do. I also do visit the venue if at all possible. If it's a venue I haven't worked at before, I do want to have a look around and just try and get some ideas of firstly where the good shots are going to be, but I'm also looking for ones that are going to be possibly a bit different to other photographers may have done, just because otherwise I'd hate my shot to look like someone else's with different people in it, because we've all got cameras that are all good enough that they're basically indistinguishable in terms of picture quality. So it's all about just looking for something a bit different.
And let's kind of touch on that too. So, as far as differentiating yourself from your particular market, how did you do that? Because it seems like photographers, no matter what country, we're kind of there's a photographer looking around every corner. Like, we're everywhere. So how did you make your business stand out?
Well, I've always said that I go for this relaxed, unposed, non-cliched approach, and that is quite a whilst that's true, it's one of those things that all couples want natural shots. No, no. So a lot of photographers say I deliver relaxed shots, but no couple's going to say we really would like some awkward shots where we're not relaxed, please. But it's just something you say, and it keys in with what they're looking for. And if they think that you're the person that can deliver what they're looking for, then that's who they're going to go with. There are a huge number of photographers around, and the same over here. There's so many. I'm off to a Christmas party with about 80 of them today, later on this evening. So whilst we all get on, we know that we're working for the same in the same market. The other thing I'd like to think that I do differently is that service level. So I'd like to kind of give the I've got this kind of level of service where you're not just rocking up on the day and thinking, oh right, sorry I'm late. I haven't got that lens. Anything like that is th that's what I think can set yourself diff apart from those that where couples are asking for either free or very low cost. That you would expect a bit more of that. I think if you're expecting to command a high-end-ish kind of price for your service, people have to see where they're getting that value from. And I think the service level, the quality of the final image, the quality of the editing, the composition, and all those things, people want to just think They want to get photos that are really stunning. They're going to look beautiful in them, and they're not going to feel like they're in a photo shoot all day long. And they want to know that I've got control of it. And if it rains, I know what we're going to do if it rains. Or if something breaks, I know what's going to happen, that I'm insured. And if someone trips over my camera bag and hurts myself, they're insured, all those little things. So that's the sort of thing that I weave into everything that I'm saying to my clients. The idea is that that's all adding little bits of value in so that when they come to see what the prices are, they can kind of align those two.
And then it makes it worth it. It's like it's one less thing they have to worry about when their
Yeah.
wedding day rolls around. I know with my wedding day, when I was actually getting married, I was a bit of a basket case. And it was the hardest thing not to try to micromanage the photographer
Oh, I'm sure.
because I was a photographer myself, but you're right, when you have a photographer that has all the bases covered, and I'm just sitting over here kind of making a checklist of things as you were talking, Nick. And so, I mean, you've got so many things going for you. I mean, beautiful photos. You touched on the level of service as well, which is something that I think with today is just as important as the level of photos that you take. Because I've talked to people who, I had a friend who posted beautiful wedding photos on Facebook. She had just gotten married, and I was like, "Hey, your photos look great." And she was like, "Eh, yeah, but we didn't get along with the photographer." And that's what stood out in her mind. The photographer got in an argument with some of her friends and family. Like, it got really nasty.
Oh
And
no.
but the photos were beautiful, but yet the level of service wasn't there. And so that's huge. And you talking about how you show up prepared with the right equipment, it's like with free photographers, they don't always have that. I had one photographer ask me the day before a wedding, what kind of lens should I have? I don't have a portrait lens. I'm like, oh, you need something.
Yeah.
So all that to say, yeah, it's you've got you're bringing so many things to light, and you've got so much going for you that I think people need to realize if they are considering stepping into wedding photography.
It is a that there's a lot of plates to spin in terms of all that side of it, all the different things that you need to get in place. There are people at the other end of the market. As I said, I'm probably at the mid to top end of the market, certainly locally. There are people at the other end that are charging a lot less, and that's not to say that they earn any less in a year. They're just doing 100 rather than 50, and they're making sure they don't, a lot of them, they just run a preset over them, and but they're not claiming to do anything else. And I think as long as you're delivering what you say you're going to deliver, so as long as those guys don't say that they're going to get the best photos in the world, they know they're not. And they're just saying that's their model. They know they're not going to get the best photos because they haven't got time to do that. But if people are on a budget and they want to get a professional photographer, then that's still loads better than relying on some poor cousin or brother that's got a camera that is then in the awful position of either not really enjoying the wedding or enjoying the wedding and not getting the shots that they wanted or just getting too few shots. And yeah, so I think that's a really important thing, is to look at all those different areas. But it's also about selling yourself as well. And it is a really tough thing for most of us to do, especially in, it's not natural to me to be really salesy and confident. So it's something I've had to do in the last few years with my other job, my old job. But it has been useful that when you're in front of people at a wedding fair, especially if you're up against other photographers in the room, they're not really looking at your work. So, like you said, those images you saw on Facebook being posted, clients aren't really thinking, "Oh, that's yeah, they've lost their highlights in that bit of the image. There's the noise in this one." They don't care about any of that stuff. It's just whether they look good enough. Yeah, they look really nice. That's what we were hoping for. What was the person like? Did you get a good feeling from them? Because that's really who what you're selling is. If not more than the photos is. You on the day, are you going to make things go smoothly so they have a really nice time, or are you going to be awkward and difficult? And you've just got to make sure you're in the first group, really, and that just means just being normal and nice and not being argumentative.
Absolutely, absolutely. And by the way, I'm really not trying to criticize anyone who, if you're starting off, trying to get your foot in the door as a wedding photographer and trying to build your portfolio, and you're doing weddings for free. I'm not trying to criticize you, because I've done free shoots before as well. And there are always different camps to that. Some folks say you should start charging right off the bat, something, which is how I feel now. But years ago, I did some stuff for free because I didn't, you know, like people do things in different ways. And so that's fine. And so, but that's why I really like having you on, Nick, because truth be told, in the future, when I have people who come to me, friends, family, and say, I'm shooting a wedding, what do? I'm probably just going to refer them to this episode and say, here, listen to this.
Well, I think there's no right way to do it, is there? There's no just one way to do it. And certainly, you know, otherwise we would all be doing the same photography courses, the same qualifications, read the same books. And I haven't done any of those things. I haven't read a photography book ever. Does that mean that I'm worse than somebody? I don't know. Probably not. I don't know. But it proves that you don't need to do that. You don't need to do free weddings.
Right.
But I've also done free things myself. So I did a free event a couple of weeks ago for a charity. So there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. If it's going to be something that you enjoy doing and it's going to be useful for you. This was useful for me because there was a celebrity that was hosting it. So I thought that's going to be useful for my portfolio. I volunteered to do it free. And it's the same with doing a free wedding. You know, that's really useful to get portfolio shots. And that is something then you can turn around and upsell and then use for your next booking. The problem is, of course, when you do a free wedding, or if you do a low-cost wedding, any referrals that you get are also going to want a free wedding or a low-cost wedding. And it's quite hard then to, you know, start ramping up in terms of cost if you've started out very low. But it just takes a bit longer. And if the difference is shooting a free wedding or just not shooting a wedding and you really want to shoot a wedding, then doing it free is the right thing.
You know, I had someone on the show, and I wish I remember who gave this advice, but I've used it before. They said when they've done a free photo shoot or a free wedding or a free gig, they will still submit paperwork. An invoice. Take them through the whole standard process and even submit an invoice showing what they would normally charge and then showing the full discount so that at least that client has a number in their head of what they would be paying so that hopefully if they refer you to someone else, they don't just say, hey, this person will, you know, do it for free all the time. So
absolutely. Really important. And likewise, if in a similar thing, if you're giving something away free, if you're bundling an album or a slideshow, stick it in the invoice as the actual cost, and then put a line through it and say fully discounted or whatever, just so that because every time you do that, then the value goes up, so their perceived value is increasing, even though, you know, they're paying the same.
Right. Absolutely. How cool. How cool. And so is there a particular photography resource or a tool, even though we just touched on Trello and Clubhouse, or anything else that you would recommend to our listeners today?
Only that, because I'm probably the least useful person to give courses or books, because I've never gone down that route. For me, the way that I learn is I have to take things apart completely and build my knowledge back up again from base principles. So I have to just work it out myself. That's not to say that's the only way to do it, and not the right way for a lot of people, because people, you know, benefit hugely from courses and books. But I don't know. I need to be able to do it myself and take a shot, look at it, think, yeah, that's not quite what I had in my mind, and work out what it was that you were trying to get that you didn't get. And if you come out with something where you've got the photo, it looks good enough, and you've got an idea how you want to do it next time even better, then that's the perfect scenario, because then you're always improving.
Excellent. Well, you know, Nick, I respect your process, and it's obviously working for you. And as far as how quickly you've grown your business, it's a heck of a lot faster than I've seen a lot of photographers. And so I really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing.
Oh, it's been a real pleasure.
This is cool. And, you know, my final question, but one of the most important, let us know where we can find you online as far as your website, social media, all that good stuff.
Yeah, well, on my website is www.nickchurchphotography.co.uk. I'm also on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter as Nick Church at Nick Church Photography. So just search Nick Church Photography on there. And there's detail, you know, so I post often about my training side of the business as well. And yeah, so I'm fairly active on there, but please, people, get in touch. And, you know, I like to chat on Messenger and, you know, just keep giving advice to other people, because I know when I was starting out, I found it quite hard to find that sort of advice. And I think it is really useful. And so, yeah, look forward to connecting with people.
How cool. How cool. Thank you. And thank you again for just being on the show and chilling and chatting with us. This has been awesome.
Excellent. Thank you.
If you're enjoying this podcast, I ask that you please leave a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you're listening. The more reviews we get, the easier it is for people to find this podcast and search rankings. We want to reach as many people as possible and help improve our photo industry. I appreciate you all. Thanks for listening.